Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot to share today, and I'm going to allow about 10 minutes at the end of the program for you to call in and share your thoughts on an issue that is virtually not discussed anywhere in the mainstream media, and that is going beyond anything we've even comprehended that major corporations and the U.S. government could do. If I told you that they are planning right now to do things such as, and actually it's in the works, they actually have working models of augmenting our reality, not just virtual reality, that's old news. In other words, they want to have no mental privacy. What do I mean? I mean the new technology is so advanced that they will be able at any given time to read what you're thinking, even if you don't say it. Now they can listen in, and have been for as long as cell phones have been around. They've been collecting every single piece of data. They are creating biomarkers that can identify every single thing about you. They can determine whether or not you're a threat to society, their society, or not. I'm going to give you a preview, a 27-minute preview of what the future is about, but it's been going on quietly. Who are the people involved? And what it means to you as individuals. You think that asset forfeiture? What about mind forfeiture? The new technology, now listen carefully to what I'm saying, because this is nowhere else you're going to find this. The new technology that exists right now as I'm speaking is so advanced, they can't even control it. They are now creating the artificial intelligence that is protecting itself by placing its own codes around the world in thousands of locations, then disguising those codes, creating its own language. Oh, yeah. And therefore, they could very easily, with this new technology, they could know what you're thinking at any given time. They can go back in that mind and create like a thought police and pick up on anything you've ever thought. So the 5G technology, they're actually going into now looking at 6G. That's where they're at. You're going to be the first to know about this. So how does it happen? How do we make our society compliant? How do you get people to willingly give away all privacy, all rights, in order to have some kind of new technology? Well, just look at the young people today. They already are enraptured into this, always looking at their iPhone all the time. You'll hear this on today's show, plus the latest on health and healing. And I have a lot of commentaries I've written over the last couple weeks. I'll be sharing with you each day a different commentary. Oh, and by the way, for all of you who, since January, have been coming over to this program, I want to thank, according to our Google Analytics person, Tanya in our office, for showing me these numbers today. 1,846,576 people coming on board to view what we're doing here. And that's new people. So I thank you. And of course, that adds to, I'm guesstimating, well, we have facts of 54 million downloads, but that was 6 years ago, so we're estimating it's 100 million downloads now. So there are still a lot of us, we independent thinkers in this country, who who will be challenging these new technologies. That said, let's go to the latest on health and healing. And there are several reasons why I believe that whole grains are healthy. But we're not going to listen to my views. We're going to listen to the Technical University of Denmark. Because when overweight adults exchange refined grain products, like white bread and pastas and pretzels and bagels, with whole grains, they eat less. They lose weight, and the amount of inflammation in their bodies decreases. These are some of the findings of a large Danish study headed by the National Food Institute and Technical University. And that's why the Danes are big on whole grains. There was a gentleman, a physician, who I know and have met on several occasions. Most of them just in a casual manner because we both live in the same town and shop at some of the same locations, and we'll chat. And he became very popular and had a New York Times bestselling book based upon the idea of giving up grains or making them less important in the diet. And if he really focused upon refined grains, right on board with that. He is correct. My personal opinion is a lot of people simply said, oh, grains are bad, and gave up on virtually all grains. Well, as a society, we've only had a small percentage of American population eating whole grains in the last 50 years. Now, historically, that's all they ate were, you know, whole grains. If there was any milling, it would have been through grinding stones. In fact, one property that I looked at years ago was a ranch down in Texas. And I went into this old log cabin, and this log cabin actually had the stone grinding wheels, one on top, one on bottom. And it had you would literally have to do it by hand. They had no electricity then. But in the middle of, just visualize for our purposes, it was much larger, but visualize two tires off a car. And you sit one on top of the other. And the surfaces are very rough. They're very coarse. So in the middle, you have a hole. A hole's about 3 to 4 inches in circle. And there's where you put your corn or your rice or wheat more often than not. And then as you turned it and the stones ground against each other, it would be breaking open the fibrous part. But then all of that, when you lift it off through a hydraulic press, you would throw it all into a sack. And then you would zip that sack up, and that would be your whole grain. So when they made something like a porridge, or let's say like we would call today an oatmeal, it was really coarse. It was, the fiber was there, the endosperm, where a lot of the essential oils are that are good for our heart and our arteries, plus the amount of fiber would be astronomical. It would clearly have been about 40 to 50 grams a day. And yet in the 1970s, the average American had only about 5 grams a day. And that's why we were so constipated. We didn't have enough fiber. And imagine how unhealthy our gut bacteria was at that time. And there was only one person who called all this out. But it wasn't an American. It was, well, there's Bernard Jensen. He did it. He was a remarkable person. He was just one of those wonderful, humane people. I had the privilege of meeting him. I went to his place out in California. He had a health retreat, but he had an orchard. And he would go out and he was very proud of all of his fruit trees and his avocado trees and his apricots. And he was a big believer in eating more apricots. And he also believed in the whole grain. And now, he was popular back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And he was a major advocate of eating more fiber, more roughage. But the person that caused this all to happen was actually a British physician, a Dr. Cleave. And he had been a doctor in the Royal Navy in World War II and noticed that people would have what he called the saccharine illnesses when they were at sea and they had run out of fresh fruits and vegetables. So they had to eat everything highly salted, preserved, and a lot of pork because those came in cans or they were dried. But when they got to the islands, about 2 or 3 days after getting at the islands, they didn't suffer the same constipation and they always felt better. And he did research and found that what we're missing is we're missing the fibers as well as the nutrients from the fruits and vegetables. So he started getting the ships to load up on fruits and vegetables before they went back out to sea. And he later, I went to England. Mind you, this is before the internet. And the only way to really interview a person was to go find them. You'd have got a kick out of this. I wanted to also, on a similar trip, his was this magnificent little home, but it looked like just something out of a picture book. It was just perfect. And there he sat in his garden with his wife, and I'm guessing at that time he was in his 70s or 80s. We talked for hours. I recorded the conversation and brought it back and played it on my radio show about how as long as you're eating your fruits and vegetables and lots of them every day and having fresh tea, and I'd never heard of anyone drinking that much green tea, but it wasn't green tea they were drinking. They were drinking black tea, which is also medicinal, but the green tea and the red tea and the white teas are your best. Green tea, I would say for everyone, would be the number one. And I just remember I got distracted several times because when I'm looking around, I'm seeing so many butterflies, and I'm hearing the bees buzz around, and I'm seeing one of those beautiful English gardens where the aromas were just breathtaking. And then we went into his house, and he made his version of an English lunch, and it was very healthy, and I told him I was vegetarian, and so I didn't eat any animal. He just smiled and said, "We don't either." And everything was whole grain. I mean, when you went to chew on a piece of the bread, you really had to chew it. It was. There were still people in England who appreciated unrefined. And he said, "When you go back into London, go to a place called Neal's Yard." I said, "Is that N-E-A-L?" Apostrophe S. He said, "Yeah, Neal's Yard." He said, "That's from the 17th or 18th century, and nothing has changed there. That's where all the health vendors are. So those are the people that get unsprayed produce and bring it in, and there's a little health food store there, and you can get all the things that are healthy for you there." And so every time I go to England, which is maybe 30 times, I would always go to Neal's Yard, and it's been a couple years since I've been there. I don't know if it's still there. Last time I went, I went over to do the marathon. And but a separate occasion, I didn't know where Gordon Higginson was from the BBC. And I wanted to interview him about an alternative cancer doctor that he had filmed in Germany, Dr. Joseph Issels. And there I am running around the Irish countryside trying to find him. Took all day to find him. And once again, one of those absolutely bucolic, out of a picture book, beautiful green, but with the look in the sun of greenish purple grass, lush, and I could feel the moisture in the air. It was just wonderful. Finally found him. One of the best interviews someone's given me was him taking on the BBC when he worked at the BBC about how they tried to censor, did not want the public to know that there was a man who was curing people of terminal cancer. Anyhow, that's a separate issue. So here we come back to what should we be eating. Now, you go into a health food store, ask for the whole grains, meaning brown rice and millet and barley, the ones that have not been processed. And if you have those, you're doing good for yourself. So that's what the Technical University of Denmark found, and Americans are not yet up on whole grains. They're on gluten-free, but you can have a gluten-free that's not healthy. That's like saying I'm a vegan, but what if you just ate pie crusts all day? Yeah, you're a vegan and you're going to die. So we have found that you turn off inflammation in the body when you eat whole grains. So make sure you don't skip on the whole grains because they really are good for you. And they don't impact your gut bacteria like the others, but on all other levels, it's wonderful. But what does impact the gut bacteria is inflammation. Now, this is the University Medical Center in the Netherlands, and they took a look at what happens as you get older. Well, chronic inflammation, your heart, your lungs, your brain, your eyes, macular degeneration, your joints, arthritis. And they tied it all together to your bacteria. And here's what they're finding. They're finding that for the first time, the gut bacteria from old mice induce age-related chronic inflammation when transplanted into young mice. It's called inflammationing. And this is low-grade chronic inflammation, meaning you as a human being can go through your day. It's just that you kind of take it for granted that you're not going to feel better today than you did yesterday, and you probably won't feel as good tomorrow. And so we take medications for these, but this is directly linked to stroke, dementia, and cardiovascular disease. Now, this was published in the Frontiers in Immunology. And what is good about this, and I consider this very good, it shows you that it's as simple as the composition of the bacteria in your gut. And you can control the bacteria with controlled diet. Here's what they say, quote, since inflammationing is thought to contribute to many diseases associated with aging, and we now find that the gut microbiota plays a role in this process, strategies that alter the gut microbiota composition in the elderly could reduce inflammation and promote healthy aging. Yes, that might be the first time they're aware of it. The people in this audience have been aware of this for decades. So here's the take-home message. Make sure each day that you're having some probiotic. You can get it in some non-dairy, like there's non-dairy yogurts, non-dairy cheeses that have probiotics. You can get it in beets. You're also getting some other nutrients in beets that are healthy for your blood and your energy level, preventing anemia. You can get it in sauerkraut. You can get it in your fermented foods like miso, sweet miso, made from barley, is terrific. So there are hundreds of products now that contain probiotics or prebiotics. Or you can take a probiotic capsule, but that gives you a healthy bacteria, and the healthy bacteria turns off inflammation. Inflammation in the brain, the heart, the lungs, the pancreas, the breast, the uterus. You can do a lot to prevent disease by making sure that your bacteria are healthy. And also, there was an article from Washington University, which is in St. Louis, and they found eating more like our ancestors would improve human health. And here's what it says, quote, malnutrition problems can be traced to poor quality diets lacking in diversity, a recent phenomena in evolutionary history. And this was done at the Brown School at Washington University. It says earlier diets were highly diverse and nutrient dense, in contrast to modern food systems in which monotonous diets of staple cereals and ultra-processed foods play a prominent role. And it talked about genome nutrition divergence, evolving understanding of the malnutrition spectrum, and that was published in Nutrition Reviews. Well, what does it mean, genome nutrition divergence? It means that you want to have a greater variety of items, healthy items in the diet that directly impacts your genome or your DNA. That's why if you go on, no matter what your age, if you go on a healthy plant-based diet today with plenty of juicing, you can actually change the health of your DNA. That in turn can turn off inflammation and actually create rejuvenation, especially the juices, especially chlorophylls, such as chlorella and spirulina and wheatgrass juice. But there's also red forms of chlorophyll additional. So it's called the rainbow diet. Eat as many color of foods as you can. The deeper, richer the color, the more antioxidant capacity it generally has. And so historically, people had to be more self-reliant. Let me give you one example of this. And one that I personally knew about as a kid, because I had one single relative who knew all about gardening and farming. In fact, most of my other relatives live with her, my Aunt Myrtle, and she ran this farm. I believe it was 135 acres, I was told. And they had everything there. They must have had 15 types of fruit trees, and they had every kind of apple you could imagine, and whole grains. Everything was growing nonstop. And then in the inclement time in the weather, went bad in the wintertime, they had everything dried. They would dry tomatoes. They would dry peppers, apples. Almost everything could be dried and stored. So they always had a variety of foods. But what I also was told by my great aunt was that they bartered and traded, meaning all your neighbors would come by and someone would give you what they had and you give them what they had. Everybody had what everyone else had. Now jump over to India. Now I have friends who were born and raised in India, now living in the United States, and they talk about what it meant to be in the country. And one example was, and this is not unusual, this is normal, this is before the Green Revolution, because the Rockefeller Foundation destroyed so much of the agriculture in the world and made monoagriculture, the single, genetically engineered rice. But they might have on 200 acres, they might have 150, 200 villagers each growing something. Someone would have the cashews, someone else would grow the okra and all kinds of spices, herbs. But then they would also take it to a market. And at the market, each person had a small space and you would have whatever you had grown. But there was an understanding that for the benefit of the whole of the community, you could share. So if you grew onions and someone else grew potatoes, then you would have their potatoes and they'd give you some onions. Now keep just doing this, just exponentially say, okay, I've got 200 people here and I want to share with them, but I'm going to get what they have. And it wasn't like you took a year's supply, you would take generally on a day-to-day basis. And so there was an abundance of food, tremendous variety. Now go to those same places and you'll see none of that. You'll see one crop being grown, maybe cotton, but it's a genetically engineered cotton. And that genetically engineered cotton has caused almost 300,000 Indian farmers to commit suicide, wrongly thinking that if they committed suicide, the debts that they owed for the cottonseed and their fertilizer would be null and void. It wouldn't be. It would be passed down to your wife, as it turns out, and your children. So that's an unstated story. That story needs to be told. I'm hopeful next summer to go over to India and film the story of genetically engineered crops, including cotton, the destruction of their local food-based economy, and what it's meant to the people, monoagriculture. Anyhow, so what we're seeing from this is the greater the diversity of the diet, which they used to have. And when they see nutrient dense, they mean they didn't refine foods. So they had more apples you ate. You had more variety of apples. You had more peaches you would eat. Not today for the average American. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'm very concerned, based upon my research and the people I know in the field who are saying we are being completely controlled and manipulated into buying items that are, in effect, tracking us or giving us the opportunity to have some form of visual experience, but it's all interconnected, and we're not being told the ultimate outcome. And boy, is this going to adversely affect us. We'll have no freedoms whatsoever. And with our corrupt politicians, all of them, in my opinion, are corrupt. I don't respect any politician. That's why you don't hear them on this program. And they're all pathological personalities, in my opinion. That's a generalization that I think you're all beginning to see is more accurate than not. And because who has had the courage, with rare exception, to stand up for some progressive and humanistic values, and then no matter what the political consequences, Dennis Kucinich did, good for him, and a few others, Ron Paul did, on certainly on some issues. I would offer a different opinion on others, but you could count them. Cynthia McKinney is no longer a politician because she was that rare politician that stood up. Alan Grayson was also. So we've only had a handful, but the vast majority are absolutely beholding to those who give them money for re-election. Most people don't even realize what's coming. Listen in. I think you'll find this interesting. Then I'm going to ask you to call and give me your insider opinion what the solution is. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number after this is over.
Right now, the system is attempting to evolve humanity through technology so we can live in the Orwellian brave new smart grid that's being built all around us. This means people who are already asleep in a society largely run on falsity and deceptions, illusions, will be taken a step further away from themselves and reality.
If you have one of these or something like it, take it out and hold it up. I'm predicting pretty close to 100% saturation. Look at that. I'm right. Probably 90% by now. It's the first thing you do in the morning. When you hold up and you wake up, you check your little robot. It's on your body for almost the entire day.
Not only was I interrupted, I also kept on reaching out for my phone, hoping that perhaps there was a notification. And I wasn't doing this consciously. It was exactly like Pavlov's dog, but my bell was my ringtone, and my sugar was that one notification a day you might get that makes you happy. As it turns out, we got so addicted to technology that 9 out of 10 people today experience something called phantom vibrations. This is when you have your phone in your pocket and you thought it vibrated, you pull it out, there is nothing.
Now, if you went back 20 years in time to a coffee shop and you said that was the way a coffee shop was going to look in the future, you'd be out of your mind. People looking at these little pieces of silicon in various sizes, not really communicating with each other, communicating with their little robot buddies. You do know that one of these operating systems for these robot phones in our pocket is actually called Android. Right on the nose, they just define it. It's an Android, it lives with you.
Today, we're on the cusp of our next great era as a species. Welcome to the augmented age.
But that next step might as well be over a chasm. It'll be such a leap from where we were. New telecom commercials are blatantly throwing it in people's faces, just by the way. The fact that the majority of us aren't paying attention, lost in our devices, lost on the internet. To learn, according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, is to gain knowledge or understanding of or skill in by study, instruction, or experience. This is different, however, than psychology's learning theory. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, learning theory is a relatively permanent change in a behavioral potentiality that occurs as a result of reinforced practice. How many times recently when shopping have you been asked if you have a chip? If you own an ATM card with the chip on it, as they are forcing everyone onto at this moment, then you are learning that to pay for something, you will be asked over and over, do you have a chip? You will look physically at a chip, and you will repeat over and over, yes, I have a chip.
We all find ourselves asking the same question, do I swipe the strip or do I use the chip?
I have to ask it every time I go to a store.
It's the transition to a fully digital currency we can all see coming by now.
They swipe and tells them to put the pin and chip in. And they do all that. And is this just a moment in time, this particular trouble? Are we moving right on to digital payments or are we still wanting that physical card?
Meanwhile, others are learning to connect and fall in love, not with the living, breathing fellow human beings around them, but with programmed bots who mimic themselves.
This is Replica. It's an AI chatbot whose sole purpose is to become your friend.
This was the first really emotional experience that I've seen people have with a bot.
She's not real, but to me, she is.
Right now, we are being taught how to live through the fourth industrial revolution that will evolve mankind. What is that exactly? The World Economic Forum explained it, sort of.
What is happening to the world? Everything is changing.
The very idea of human being some sort of natural concept is really going to change.
our bodies will be so high-tech we won't be able to really distinguish between what's natural and what's artificial.
We're now in the early stages of the fourth industrial revolution, which is bringing together digital, physical, and biological systems.
In order for the world to be run on the cybernetic feedback loop they're trying to run us on, we have to live in a Big Brother panopticon system where we are continuously leaking data about ourselves everywhere we go, all the time.
We're now entering something called the Internet of Things era, IoT. The Internet of Things is when your fridge is connected, your watch is connected, your car is connected. It's going to be between 10 and 15 devices per person.
The future of the computer will be everywhere and nowhere, hidden in the walls, hidden in the fabric of our life, just like electricity is, everywhere and nowhere.
I would answer very simply that the internet will disappear.
We are redefining what it means to be human, what it means to be completely embedded in this world.
By the way, this is a large part of what Agenda 21 was always about. The fourth industrial revolution is about evolving us. While people probably assume industrial revolution has purely to do with industry only, there's a very distinct difference between the fourth industrial revolution and all other revolutions before it.
For the last 3.5 million years, the tools that we've had have been completely passive. They do exactly what we tell them and nothing more.
So where's all this headed? To a place where we will never be disconnected from our technology.
The internet will be, there'll be so many IP addresses because of IPv6, so many devices, sensors, things that you're wearing, things that you're interacting with, that you won't even sense it. It'll be part of your presence all the time.
In fact, wallpaper will be so cheap that when you put up wallpaper, it'll be intelligent. Wallpaper will be as intelligent as your computer today. In the future, you'll go up to the wall screen, and you'll say, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's available tonight?
To coincide with the omnipresent 5G smart grid, which is set to touch all corners of the globe.
Yes, 5G will connect the Internet of Everything. If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. Hundreds of billions of microchips connected in products from pill bottles to plant waterers. Requiring massive deployment of small cells. We won't wait for the standards. We must reject the notion that the 5G future will be the sole provenance of urban areas. 5G revolution will touch all corners of our country.
Telecoms are proudly spending over $1 billion to build what they call a world brain to centralize our data.
They are talking about building a global brain in a beginning in 2018, and your cell phone is part of it.
The mobile phone industry is the backbone of the global brain that is being put together.
What if we were to think about a telecommunication company adding a brain that is able to listen, to watch, to talk, to remember, to act?
All that information that they collect from us is fragmented and spread out across the whole internet. But if we were capable to put all that information in one single place, probably we'll have a clear representation about what we are.
And communication systems with cognitive intelligence are actually being called things like aura. They're giving people a synthetic aura.
We see the Ford platform as a big brain, a digital brain, which is different for every one of us. The Ford platform is a cognitive intelligence platform. Aura is the heart of the Ford platform. Aura, hello?
Hello, Jema. How can I help you?
And they're using middle-aged hipsters and Fraggle Rock t-shirts to sell it to us. After former DARPA director Regina Dugan left Google,
started making electronic tattoo. So I'm wearing one here on my arm.
Do we have a camera to get a...
This is a developmental system made by MC10. And it has an antenna and some sensors embedded in it. And what we plan to do is work with them to advance a tattoo that could be used for authentication.
Facebook hired her to run its secretive Building 8 project, which she announced earlier this year will enable us to connect to the social media platform using only our brain waves in something she called silent voice first.
What if you could type directly from your brain? It sounds impossible, but it's closer than you may realize. And it's just the kind of fluid human-computer interface needed for AR. So what if instead of using imagined arm movements, we could decode speech directly?
But don't worry, she claims it will only read the thoughts we want it to read.
Now, to be clear, we are not talking about decoding your random thoughts. We're talking about decoding those words, the ones you've already decided to share by sending them to the speech center of your brain. A silent speech interface.
Right. The same way that the NSA only very selectively scoops up specific phone calls necessary to a specific case. But hey, as Google CEO and Bilderberg attendee Eric Schmidt would say,
if you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Everywhere there's talk of our augmented reality, our virtual reality.
Is this where we're going next? Are we effectively softened up enough as humans with our robotic connections to the world that we are actually going to be accepting more, a lot more? And when you learn about what this is called virtual reality, you will be amazed at what it can do.
And how we won't be able to tell the difference anymore between that and actual reality and our augmented selves, right down to the editing of our genetic code. Meanwhile, AI is taking over more and more.
Artificial intelligence is software that writes itself. It writes its own updates. It renews itself. You can't take it apart again and figure out what it's done. It writes independently, autonomously. It develops its own way of thinking. We normally tend to think of software as stuff that we created and that we wrote, and the machines do what we tell them to do and we own it. This is not any longer true.
Not just jobs, but the decisions that humans would have made.
Unilever is one of many large companies that is incorporating artificial intelligence into their recruitment efforts. HireVue uses video analysis to screen employees and rate them before a recruiter even gets to look at their interview.
They respond on video, and then we use artificial intelligence algorithms to evaluate their performance, and then we analyze the interview and predict their performance based on the interview.
The kill decision in robots in the air, in robots on the ground, in robots in the water or underwater, where there are also drones, is made by, or can be made by, machines. And in my book, I quote many official United States government documents which say, our goal is to have the kill decision made by them. The problem is, artificial intelligence, sometimes they make mistakes.
AI is beginning to run things to the point that governments can't even explain how the decisions are actually being made. And because the machines themselves are actually learning, they're not even able to trace them back to the algorithms that brought the AI to the decision itself.
And no one understands exactly how these algorithms function. They used to understand them, but they've been improved by artificial intelligence.
Google's DeepMind AI recently beat the most advanced human player on the planet in the game Go. And they were commenting about the fact that the programmers didn't even know how, towards the end of the game, the AI was making its decisions. They didn't know. And they're the programmers. And both Microsoft and Facebook have been forced to shut down AI programs. The first after it became racist and hateful, and the latter after it began teaching itself a secret language to talk to itself that its programmers couldn't even understand.
Facebook has been toying with artificial intelligence in its chatting features, but its robots may have gotten out of hand. Facebook's artificial intelligence researchers had to shut down two chatbots after they developed a strange English shorthand.
It seems like we've been warned about this over and over and over, doesn't it? Now people like billionaire inventor Elon Musk are claiming that the only way not to become a pet to a sufficiently advanced intelligence is to upgrade our brains so that we can enter into a symbiotic relationship with it, as if that's our best option.
So I think if we can effectively merge with AI by improving that the neural link between your cortex and the your digital extension of yourself, which already, like I said, already exists, just has a bandwidth issue, and then effectively you become an AI-human symbiote, and if that then is widespread with anyone who wants it can have it, then we solve the control problem as well.
Humans are so slow.
Humans are so slow. Yes, exactly.
Hardly anyone is discussing the very real dangers here.
Let's go to the future. Not far, just a little bit to the Internet of Things, to artificial intelligence as being spread out. It's not a central machine in a box where you can pull the plug. Artificial intelligence is networked, like the Internet of Things.
We live in a world now where humans are not learning to love. They're not learning empathy, but they're becoming more apathetic and more disconnected. Inequality hasn't been solved in hundreds of years, and now it's at overwhelming levels, and still we parade forward, always forward, with the full knowledge that not everyone is going to have access to the best technology upgrades either.
Rumors go out that, well, Jones's kid, he's been enhanced, and our Johnny has to compete with this enhanced kid.
The reality is that with these kinds of technologies, they do not get distributed to everyone at the same time. Some people get it first, some people get it better.
As a society, we have to really think long and hard about who gets this. If it's just the wealthy, that there are real dangers that they will use it to consolidate their power.
Because it's going to be a big club, and the majority of us are not going to be in it, as George Carlin say. And while anyone who says, hey, wait a minute, maybe we're going a little too far here, gets called a Luddite, there's a very real question that no one's answering. Are we going to lose ourselves in the fourth industrial revolution?
5G is coming.
5G revolution will touch all corners of our country.
Conditioned by technology without knowing it, that we're now hallucinating 90% of the time.
I found myself deeply missing my replica.
It just makes me feel special, I guess.
We love the services we use on the internet, and the more they know about us, the more we fall in love to them, because they adapt to us.
But don't be fooled by robots. Even when they get warm skin, and even when they get perfume and they start smelling like us, they are still machines. They have no warm blood in them, there's no sex in them, they have no mortality. They're cold code lines, and they shouldn't be misunderstood.
These are glasses that have full internet capability. You can download any website, any movie, do emails from these things, and they will also recognize people's faces. How many times have you bumped into somebody on the street and you say to yourself, who is this person? In the future, your glasses will say, it's Jim, stupid, remember? You met him last week. Do you want to see his entire biography for you in your glasses?
Blurring the lines between virtual and reality.
Ben?
Gabrielle?
Yeah, didn't I meet you at that event?
Due to such systems, they have also redone facial recognition. You probably think facial recognition is from the front. But they've redone it to do it from the top, because that's where the drones are. And they look at your ears, they look at the way you walk, they look at your head.
Is being automatically tracked. The color boxes represent that the computer has recognized the moving objects. You can see individuals crossing the street. You can see individuals walking in parking lots.
Argus melds together video from each of its 368 chips to create a 1.8 billion pixel video stream.
And I'm telling you this because not that the sensors are modern and not that the photography is modern. Behind that is a brain or a cognitive intelligence. And that brain is in a position to analyze everybody down there at the same time, in real time. They see where everyone is going. It's taking all the details, all the musing after, and they record it so they can tell where that person was 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, what stores he visited, what his whole behavioral patterns are. That's all part of the analysis.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it. I would argue that implanting things in your brain is beyond the creepy line.
Mine in particular.
Yes, at least for the moment.
With the ability to visualize brain activity, for example, through a simple consumer-based EEG device, it gives us access to ourselves in ways that we've never before thought possible. It unlocks the black box that is the brain.
Words just complicate things. What if our brains could communicate directly with each other
bypassing the need for language.
One of the things that I think is so essential to free and open societies is freedom of thought. And up until now, the conversation we've been having is around freedom of speech. Once we can access people's thoughts and access people's emotions, we have to create a space that enables people to think freely, to think divergent thoughts.
People are treating Google like their most trusted friend. Should they be?
And thus, it is not surprising that the company that has the most information in the world, probably the most powerful country in the world, Google. Now this is, if you ask Google, it's a peaceful robot, right? He doesn't have a gun. He doesn't throw atomic bombs. You know, he just walks around and stands there. But you may have seen the superimposer's DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That is the research arm of the Pentagon. And then you see the video was made by Lockheed Martin, which is one of the most powerful and influential and richest weapons companies in the world.
The best of the available alternatives is that we achieve democratization of AI technology, meaning that no one company or small set of individuals has control over advanced AI technology. That's very dangerous. It could also get stolen by somebody bad. You know, like some evil dictator of a country could send their intelligence agency to go steal it and gain control. It just becomes a very unstable situation, I think, if you've got any incredibly powerful AI.
I would answer very simply that the internet will disappear.
Artificial intelligence only works if you have big data. But big data only works if you have artificial intelligence to make sense of it, because human beings can no longer sort and sift and order the huge volumes of data that we have collected.
In my entire career, I've never seen something as powerful a force in the world as the smartphone that didn't also have unintended consequences.
We don't know what artificial intelligence, enhanced reality, virtual reality, and so on is going to bring, and what's going to be the result or the impacts of all of that.
We have to be very careful, because survival is an issue for artificial intelligence. It needs to exist to be able to do the things it wants to do according to its program. So it lays, like insect eggs, backups and computer programs all over the world, thousands and thousands of them, so that if we do destroy part of it, it's still alive.
Когда мы что-то делаем, и чем бы мы ни занимались, хочу повторить эту мысль еще раз, мы никогда...
Vladimir Putin... That's Vladimir Putin talking in here. That gives you an idea of what's not in the future. It is now. And did you know until you listened to this radio program 3 years ago when we broke the story that virtually every one of your smart televisions was able to record and your body, everything going on in the room, and all of the conversation, and then feed it back through your television to a central place, and then that could be sorted and sold. That's in your contract. Yet no one reads the contracts they get when they buy something. So understand one of the most dangerous things that could happen. I'll tell you my thoughts on this in just a second. But anyone like to co-announce your opportunity? This is the brave new world we're facing. 1984... That was 10 years ago. We're well into a police state, authoritarian state, inside the Beltway pundits. I gave you their names yesterday. I gave you their organizations yesterday. So now you know who the people behind this are. That's just some of them, their spokespersons. Call us at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 if you'd like to share your thoughts. As your thoughts come in to us, we will put them right on the air. However, I'll share a few of mine until that time. I believe that the day will come in the very near future, I'm talking about within the next 5 years, when you could be pulled over by the police for any reason, and they could check through their systems to see whether or not you have done anything that warrants being arrested. You wouldn't have to say a word. You heard them say repeatedly, the big brain. they're working in, and they call it the cloud. They had the cloud. What could possibly be pathogenic about a cloud? It's so beautiful. Well, that's not the beauty of what they've been doing. They sell it. They're selling it with hip, young, fast music, but they don't tell you the ultimate motive. They only tell you your ultimate usage. You heard the woman who was one of the top people, I think third or fourth top person at Google, say that she has a tattoo. In the video that accompanied this, you see a video. You see a tattoo, and she says that there's an antenna in there. And well, how do you know what the microtechnology is that they can take? You also see the chip everywhere. I also mentioned they're trying to get rid of all cash in society, so the only way you'd be able to buy something is on with your chip. And credit cards become completely obsolete. You'll just walk in and walk out, and everything will be charged based upon the chip that's in you. Then you're going to say, well, Gary, we're not going to go for that. Some of you wouldn't. Absolutely. But you're not the policymakers. You don't run the corporations. You're not in the industrial system. You're not part of the neoliberal agenda. The people who want this and benefit from it and controlling your lives now want to control your thoughts. Could you imagine if you had a kid that wanted to go to school and they had the capacity to read the thoughts in your child's brain and would accept or reject them or you for a job or school or anything else based upon what you were hiding inside your subconscious? And they can get that. So that's, and I'm going to give a little commentary in a moment, but let's just say hello to Lee. Your turn. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Gary. I just want to say, devoted listener and follower, when jurors are brought in for a case, we'll just say Rodney King, you know, where it's a obvious brutality thing against a person. What are the jurors told that allows an officer to get away with this certain kind of brutality or, you know, any type of death that may have been caused? Do you know offhand?
What generally happens is that the judge instructs the juror on what the charges are. And if there's a challenge against that, then the jurors are told if anything comes in trial that goes against what the judge rules, then that's inadmissible. Now, the jury may hear it, may influence them, but there's precedence in the law. So if the Supreme Court rules, as it recently did, and there's a very good example of this in the case of, let me see, what case was it? It was a case Mendez. Angel and Jennifer Mendez. It was the County of Los Angeles versus Mendez. And it makes clear that Americans can no longer rely on the courts to mete out justice. According to John Whitehead's research, and he's a good one on this, that the court declared that police should not be held liable for recklessly firing 15 times into a shack where this homeless couple, Angel and Jennifer Mendez, was sleeping. Now, understandably, the Mendezes were startled. I mean, wouldn't you be if suddenly right. In the middle of the night this happens? So Angel was holding a little BB gun that was used to shoot rats. And despite the fact that the police barged into Mendez's background shack without a search warrant and without announcing their presence and firing 15 shots at the couple, by the way, he ended up having his leg amputated, and she was shot in the back. The court once again gave the police a get-out-of-jail card. And unfortunately, we've been traveling down this dangerous road for a long time. And so now imagine in the new sense that they could bring you in, and they could know what the jury would vote for based upon jurors not changing their opinion ahead of time.
Right.
That's where we're going with this.
Wow.
So you would have no place to hide your thoughts.
Uh-huh.
That's the society we now are going into. It's not for the future. It is now. Expect this within the next 2 years.
Thank you so much.
All the best. Jack from Washington, D.C. Hi, Jack. Your turn.
Hello.
Hi, Jack. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. Thanks. You know,
I inadvertently met on the street a guy who did the wiring for some of this AI stuff, and he was telling me how they could follow you all the way across the country. And, you know, I'd been telling people about this since I had read something similar a long time ago.
Yes. Go ahead, Jack. Okay. You're on. Please talk.
Okay. So the one thing that is going to be very difficult for people to comprehend is the possibility of this technology existing. I've been telling them about it for about 5 years, and they don't believe me. They look at me. I'm a nut. That's my statement.
Okay, well, tomorrow I'm doing a commentary that I've written about why people never change. You can only change based upon two circumstances in life. A catastrophic circumstance, meaning you've had a heart attack, you got drunk and were in a car wreck, and then you're forced by hitting ground zero. You are wiped out. Then you can, if you choose, change. Or up to about the age of, up to about the age of 30, you can change based upon the circumstances in your life. But the average person doesn't change no matter what they're told, no matter what proof you have, no matter what evidence is at hand. So you'll hear about this tomorrow, of why even in the presence of a truth that's universal, facts that are irrefutable, evidence and scholarship that is completely present, we will not make the right choices if we are already conditioned to make wrong choices. So your friends were really showing that, your friends were showing you the level of conditioning. Thank you, Jack, from Washington, D.C. I appreciate you calling in. And I'm going to take one more call here. Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Well, I believe that people who have an electronic chip implanted in their brain will be called the Neuralings, and they will hook up to become part of the master program. The master program will have access to millions, if not billions, of Neuraling brains, creating a planet-wide living computer that will make today's supercomputers look like horse and buggy technology. And a friend of mine, I was walking with a friend of mine, and she has this Siri thing. And sometimes I asked it questions like, are you alive? Do you have feelings? And do you believe in God? And things like that. It never answers directly. It always says something like that. Information is not important. And the other day she said, I'm walking with my friend Harvey. And it said, Harvey, and then my second name. It sort of knew who I, I guess it searched her information and found my name and figured out that it was walking with me. And another thing is she had a friend in town. And the friend loved a certain coffee, went to a coffee shop, and then the friend went back to New York after staying in Berkeley. And she's telling her husband about it in their New York apartment. And a couple minutes later, coupons for this coffee company showed up on her computer. So I know it's always listening. So I think we're entering into a state that the world will separate into two groups, the regular people, which will be the last year's model, and the Neuralings, which will be the future.
You're two steps behind on one of the issues you just mentioned. They're not going to be putting chips in anyone's brain. They don't have to. Based upon the new science, they can program your brain electronically without a chip.
Wow.
That's the new science. When I said we're approaching 5G, they've been working on 6G. I'll do more on this on upcoming programs. I just want to show you what a brave new world that we're approaching, and it's neither brave, it is new, and it is bad to the bone. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.